question is this: how do we get two groups of people to come together? Those that are completely disengaged with what I call their personal physical health status, and those people who are in love with their physical health status and doing something about it. How do we bring them together so that everybody fits into the second category of falling in love with their physical health, lowering their risk of disease, and feeling amazing? We're going to find out in today's episode of The New Science of Physical Health. Everybody, welcome back to this third episode in Decipher the Health Code in the age of Netflix, Uber, Google, and screens. If you've been following along and you've listened to the previous two episodes, you'll know that the reference to the age of Netflix, Uber, Google, and screens is really just a euphemism for the age that we find ourselves in when streaming is anywhere in your pocket, on your laptop, on your television, on your desktop, and you can get access to it anytime, which represents the world of leisure. But there's more than just Netflix, and we're all aware of that, even though Netflix has, listen to this, 214 million accounts worldwide. And it's really the age of technology and leisure that's impacted our physical health outcomes. So here's what we're going to do in this episode. We're talking about the three collaborators, three different groups of people, which I've represented with different people you're about to meet in finishing off one person we're going to meet, which is Megan, who is a leader in health and physical education from literally middle America, in Minnesota, and she is a health and physical education teacher, but also the executive director of SHAPE Minnesota. And SHAPE is the Society for Health and Physical Education, which is the peak professional body for health and physical education teachers in the United States of America. And every state has its own a group or its own representation of a state board and a state executive director. And we've been talking with Megan, and you've got to go back and listen to the previous episode, because we're going to pick up and do the transition bell in just a moment where she's answering a question that I finished off on yesterday's episode. So once we get through that, there's going to be a discussion of about 15 minutes between myself and Megan from Minnesota. So I'm in Sydney, Australia, and we did an interview over Zoom, and she's in Minnesota. Isn't that amazing? Half a world away. And we can meet and chat just at the drop of a hat. So you're going to hear that and hear some discussion from Megan and I. Then we're going to meet in today's episode our second collaborator. Now, remember, there's three collaborators. The people who are around the world, health and physical education teachers like myself, and there's also people who are from health technology, and that's the second person we're going to meet today. I call this person Dr. Andrew Rickman, the Thomas Edison of health technology in the 2020s. You'll find out why when we get to about 20 minutes into this episode and we transition to the first episode from a mini-series I did off the back of an interview with Dr. Rickman. So Dr. Rickman's from London. He's the chairman, CEO, and founder of a billion-dollar health technology company, which is it's amazing, because what he has invented and what he and his team are doing, he's got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of staff to work for him. And I was granted an hour interview with Dr. Rickman earlier this year. And what he and his team are doing are literally about to change your physical health outcomes and help us to decipher the health code. So I've taken the first episode from that mini-series, The Thomas Edison of Health Technology in the 2020s. You'll see why I've called it that when we get into it. And about 20 minutes into this episode, 22, 3 minutes, we transition into the first part of that. Then in tomorrow's the next episode. Tomorrow for me, I'll be releasing it. But in the next episode, whenever you get to it, then you'll hear more about or more from episode number one, which goes for about 45 minutes. The full episode one from that mini-series. But then after that, another day or two later, we will release the third collaborator
and that is a professor of exercise physiology and a professor of cardiology, who has also invented something in the world of health technology and combined it with medical science. I won't reveal any more. But these three collaborators, listen to this, they collaborate in helping us to decipher the health code, but they've never met. But as I walk you through each of the next episodes and we get to the back end of this mini-series, you will see just how powerful the collaboration of these three areas are. And then we're going to have some more after that, but I'll reveal that later on. So you'll see how powerful their collaboration is, even though the three different people in this part of the mini-series actually haven't met each other and don't know each other. They still are collaborating. You'll see why, and you'll pick up on that theme. All right, everybody, transitioning now to pick up directly from where yesterday's episode finished off, with where Megan McCollum from Minnesota in the USA, a health and physical education leader, is answering a question that I asked her in our private conversation. And then after that, we're going to transition straight into the first section of the mini series and our second collaborator, Dr. Andrew Rickman. All right, here we go.
Yeah, so after I had graduated from high school, I played in college. We had like a co-ed league, so it wasn't as competitive, but it was just more recreational. And so I played, we played kickball, we had softball teams, we had volleyball teams, and even as an adult, I played in a softball league with other adults that just played on teams just for fun. It'd be, you know, after work, you go and you play and maybe have a couple drinks afterwards. And it's more of like a social aspect. Yeah.
So here's the follow-up question I've got. Given, how long have you been teaching now for?
This is my ninth year teaching.
Ninth year. So you're almost a decade, right?
Yeah.
Given the people that you know in the different schools across the districts you know in Minnesota, because this is what I'm really fascinated about. You interact with lots of different adults, and I guess a lot of them are like us. They're physical education teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all varying ages. So you must meet, you must interact with people my age in their 50s and people in their 40s and 30s and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be, what's your observation about how physically active those people are? The people who are leading the parade, so to speak, as far as physical education is concerned. Do you see lots of them playing sports, or have they moved more into doing some kind of just fitness activities?
I'd say that's more fitness based. I mean, there's still some that will play in leagues, like our education commissioner from Minnesota. She actually played in a adult women's hockey league.
Yeah.
And so sometimes there will be some team sports that you could still participate in as an adult, 40s, 50s, even older. But most of the time, I think it's more of a fitness based.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times it's also, especially with people like us who are teachers and we teach physical education and health, more of a coaching side of things. So you might get involved while you're coaching. You might be participating with your players as well. But
yeah,
I'd say as an adult, there's not a lot of opportunities.
So there's lots of sports coaching. See, this is the observation I make here in Australia. Okay, I look at that data and I go, 80% of students don't meet the minimum guidelines in the seventh grade in Australia. And then it increases to 98.1% by the time they're 18.
Mm-hmm.
And the data is very, very similar. And then I look at the overall levels of physical activity, whether it's sports, this is for adults, so people in their 20s, people in their 30s, people in their 40s typically. Here in Australia, 65% of adults do zero physical activity in Australia.
Wow.
Nothing. Like week to week to week, absolutely zero. And I go, and there's no question that in America, the disease rates. So when I look at things, I want to interview the professor. I interviewed this professor from Duke University recently in North Carolina. He's a specialist in cardiovascular disease, the number one cause of sickness and death. And I look at and we're talking about the prevalence of all the precursors that lead up to a heart attack or a stroke or something, you know, type 2 diabetes and so on, stuff like that, you know, metabolic disease. And the prevalence is just like the increase is just through the roof. And yet I worked with another professor from Norway who has developed a software that converts your heart rate pattern into a health impact score, and that health impact score out of 100 on a daily basis is validated on 730,000 people worldwide that says, if you get a specific score for you or specific score for me, it will decrease your risk of those diseases, high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, obesity, so on and so on, by an exact percentage based on that score. And it doesn't matter what physical activity you actually do. So if you love sport, play sport. But if you don't love sport, the objective is, see, I love sport because of the, still competitive. I love sport because it's still fun to watch, but my body doesn't hold up as well. Although the mind still gets stays competitive, that never changes. But the objective becomes enjoy those aspects of it. But the reality is, as a health, and for us in Australia, it's always been health and physical education 50-50, is that's the component that we're looking at and going, you know, what's the goal? And that's one of the questions of what that I had down there. What are you, from your perspective, about the leadership that you've rolled, that you're taking on? Is that new as well, that appointment for you?
Yes. So for Minnesota, I just started being the executive director after our national, or not our national, our state conference on November 1st. Yep. But I've been the executive director for Central District for the last 2 years.
Okay, right. Okay. So this is a, so the role you've got now is a different district, is that right? No.
So we've got, each state has our own SHAPE association. Oh. And then, well, SHAPE or AFERD. It used to be AFERD. And then we've got five districts in the U.S. So, there, like I said, there's nine states within our central district.
You're now the executive director of the whole state, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, got it, got it. Now, and it's like before it was a district of it. Okay, terrific. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many physical education teachers are working in the state of Minnesota, approximately?
I want to say...
No, you might not. That's a weird question, by the way.
I don't. I want to say it's somewhere around 2,000, maybe.
Okay.
In the whole state.
So around 2,000. Yeah, that sounds for a state that size, sounds about right. Because I know how many are in my state based on our population. So 2,000 does sound about right. So then here's my question. What do you think? So my thinking is this, right? I love sport, still love sport today. That's never going to change. But if so many Australian teenagers are graduating into their 20s and they're developing precursor conditions to the two leading causes of sickness and death, cardiovascular disease and cancer events, the two things they're most likely going to be faced with that are going to cause sickness, disease, or premature death, I'm thinking to myself, this is how I view it. I'm so fascinated by other people's opinions, particularly people, you know, half a world away, which is what our distance is, you know. I'm thinking to myself, I have developed a method to get people, regardless of whether they love sport or not, to fall in love with their physical health outcomes rather than loving. So if you love sport, there's a band of people who love that. But there, I see this much bigger band of people who don't want to do any physical activity because they didn't love sport. They were coordinated. They just got busy after school. They're in a family life. They're working hard in a career. They did love sport. Now they've dropped away from loving sport. But they haven't got this mental emphasis on, you know, I want to be involved in physical activity of some kind to produce this health impact rather than just the competitiveness of sport. And from your perspective in PE, what you see in Minnesota with your kids and any of the teachers you interact, what do you think it should be in terms of, you know, going forward? What are you looking to give your students and also have other teachers do?
Yeah, so in Minnesota, we follow the national health and PE standards. Yep. And at the high school level, we get away from team sports and we focus more on lifelong learning and what kinds of activities could you do for a lifetime. Yep. And how is that going to impact you? And why is it important to care? I mean, yeah, a lot of people have sports, but you also look at it and like you said, it's a pretty small band of people who continue to play sports into their adulthood. And so it's focusing on what kinds of skills can we give you to teach you how to maintain a healthy lifestyle when you're an adult and when you're growing your own family, how are you going to keep them involved in physical activity and maintaining that healthy lifestyle?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Is there much in your training that you do, so to become a physical education teacher, is there, like, I've created this new show, which I don't know, I don't even know how it got to be so big so quickly. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's only been a year, called The New Science of Physical Health. Like, until I started interviewing professors of medicine and cardiology, exercise physiology, molecular biology, cancer, the whole lot, until I started doing that, I never realized this complex world of medical research and health adaptations that go on inside the body. Like, so at a molecular level and a physiological level, physical activity produces certain adaptations. And I had an idea of it, but nowhere near the amount of detail. Like, if you did this amount of physical activity, here are the set of health adaptations that would happen, and that would cause a linear correlation with your decrease in risk of a cardiovascular event. And I'm going, okay, I'm starting to talk to these people over the last decade. It's like, so when you started teaching is when I started interviewing professors. And it's like, and it's an incredible, in your training at university or post-university training at professional development, do you guys do much about the science of health adaptations from physical activity? Is that something you
do? Not a lot. I had to take like a exercise physiology class, a human physiology class, anatomy, kinesiology, human biology, but nothing that really gets at that level.
Yeah, but not the actual, this is the physical, this is the level. Because what this professor from, his name is Professor Ulrich Wisloff from Norway, he's got a PhD, he runs a staff of 55 medical researchers at the Science of Technology and University of Technology and Science in Norway, okay, at Trondheim. Mm-hmm. And for 20 years, he's been working on medical research. So he's an exercise physiologist and a cardiologist. And he's been working on how do we convert Megan's heart rate pattern, who's in your late 20s or something like that.
Mid-30s, but thank you.
All right, let's go late 20s. Let's go late 20s. And then me, how do we convert Shane's heart rate pattern at 55, no matter where they live in the world, into a health impact score that has a medically provable link to the correlation of your risk of a cardiovascular or cancer event and your risk from diabetes, your risk from obesity, your risk from high blood pressure, your risk from high blood glucose. And so that's what he spent. And I started interviewing him and reading the medical research and I go, oh my goodness, this is like a brain explosion that their physical activity is all about. If you want to be healthy, it's about health adaptations, regardless of the activity you're doing. And so he's a fascinating guy to listen to. In fact, I'll send you a couple of the audio interviews that I've done with him. And he's just an interesting kind of guy. There's no question about it. So yeah, it sounds like you did similar to what I did. You did anatomy, physiology, and walked all through those science things. But when I got into the teaching side, and when I found out this, my son was born in 2009, and that's when I started to investigate childhood physical activity and then health adaptations and health outcomes as they transition from childhood to teenagers to adults. So there's a professor here in Australia in his 70s who researches childhood physical activity outcomes, and that it's mind-blowing. He's the kind of guy that actually does the data. He's got a team of professors from a university across every state in Australia, and they pull data together and they show many children are developing some of the blood vessel diseases that adults develop.
Let's transition now out of that part of my conversation with Megan, the health and physical education teacher, and the leadership role that she's in, which she talked about just there, and bring up a key point as we move on, that you're going to get more of that conversation through different sections of this mini series. But let me just bring to light the key point that I see there from that section of our conversation. There is so much power in someone like Megan and the 2,000 odd physical education and health teachers that are across the state of Minnesota, and the influence that they have on the entire population of young people who will soon move through into adulthood
and the next generation comes through. There is so much power that they have in influencing them about what is the correct dose of physical activity that will improve their personal physical health status and lower their risk of sickness, disease, and premature death. One of the things that Megan made a great point on, was very interesting to me, was the level of professional development that she has or has not had the opportunity to dive into that relates to molecular and physiological health adaptations that we can rely on as a framework, a collective efficacy, that no matter where we go in the world, everybody's getting the same answer. Like I said before, the doctors, the medical researchers, they have the same answer because the science is very, very accurate about what happens in a person's response physiologically and molecularly to what's called the correct dose of physical activity. More on that and deeper explanation throughout the mini-series, but really inside the PE Teacher's Health Lab, that's where we go into the correct dose, what it is, how to achieve it, how to track it, and how to know whether or not you're being classified as physically healthy. Let me now move on to the second collaborator in this part of the mini-series. His name is Dr. Andrew Rickman. He holds a PhD in an area that I almost guarantee you've never heard, a discipline you've never heard of. Dr. Rickman holds a PhD in something called silicon photonics. Now, Megan and Dr. Rickman have never met. In fact, if Megan listens to this episode, this will be the first time that she ever hears of Dr. Rickman. And if Dr. Rickman listens to this episode, also the same for him in reverse. They've never met. But you're about to see how their work will be a collaboration in the future. Let me set this up properly. I created a separate mini-series with an interview off the back of my work with Dr. Rickman, who's the chairman of a $1 billion health technology company headquartered in London, England. The company is called Rockley Photonics. The series is called The Thomas Edison of Health Technology in the 2020s. Now, you can get access to this full five-hour mini-series. It is really one of the best ones I've ever done inside the PE Teachers Health Lab. And then if you wherever you're listening to this and you're streaming it from the internet, there's a link inside the show notes and on the web page to get access to the PE Teachers Health Lab. So our PE teacher friend in Minnesota does not yet know, Megan, how she is a collaborator with Dr. Rickman. But after I share episode one of that mini-series, the Thomas Edison of Health Technology in the 2020s, she will begin to understand, Dr. Rickman will begin to understand of how they've become directly linked to each other, plus allied health professionals and health and physical education teachers around the world, and how they are going to have, with Dr. Rickman's work, create a collective efficacy that will help us to decipher the health code in the age of, the technological age, of Netflix, Uber, Google, and screens. So here is how this will work. I'm going to give you just a couple of minutes right now from episode one of the mini-series, so you can get a flavor of what Dr. Rickman is all about. Then, in the next episode, you will hear the rest of episode one, because we're already up to a point right now where this episode is long enough. And then episode one of the mini-series, the Thomas Edison of Health Technology in the 2020s, episode one actually goes for 45 minutes. So I'm not going to combine them. But at the end of the next, so we're going to just listen to the introduction to that episode itself, maybe a minute or two. But at the end of the next episode for this mini-series, I'll bring it all together and show you how these two people, and people like Megan as health and physical education leaders, and like Dr. Rickman, are collaborators for our future health destiny. Then after that, when we've met Dr. Rickman, we're going to meet the third collaborator in this particular segment, a professor of exercise and physiology. exercise physiology and also a professor of cardiology. His work is from Norway. His work is ranked by Google Scholar as one of the top four scientists in the world in his discipline of converting the impact of physical activity into health outcomes. And his invention is truly inspiring. So, let me now give you a couple of minutes from this episode, The Thomas Edison of Health Technology in the 2020s. And I'll be back to finish off after that. Thomas Alva Edison, whose understanding of the scientific world led to what has been called the greatest revolution in human history. In his 84 years, Edison acquired a record number of 1,093 patents. The most famous of his inventions was the incandescent light bulb in 1878, which would reshape our indoor lighting and forever change and separate light from fire. He also developed the phonograph in 1877, the year before, the central power station a little bit after in 1881, the motion picture studio in 1892, and a year later, a system for making and showing motion pictures. Did you know he invented alkaline storage batteries? He improved upon Alexander Graham Bell's telephone. He was one of the first inventors to apply the principles of organized science and teamwork to the process of invention and working with many researchers and employees at the same time. And he established the world's first industrial research laboratory. So what stopped Edison from continuing on to contribute so much of his gifts to the world? Edison died of complications of type 2 diabetes on October 18th, 1931, at his home in Glenmont in West Orange, New Jersey. He became so busy inventing new things for the world that he lived in, he never paid attention to life inside his body. The paradox is this: it stopped him from living any life at all. Welcome to this mini-series, which I've titled The Thomas Edison of Health Technology in the 2020s. My name is Shane Stubbs, and I'm your host. So for many of you, this is the first time you've ever met me. So let me give you a brief version of how I came to create this genre of education called the New Science of Physical Health and a brand new book called Health Secrets, The New Science of Physical Health, The Expert 7-Step Blueprint to be more physically healthy than 98% of people in your community. So here's the best way to start. About 10 years ago, I recorded a DVD called Discover the Beat of Your Healthy Heart. I'm going to give you 60 seconds of that DVD so you know what is called my primary motivating factor for creating Health Secrets, the book, and the course and the other content of it under the banner of the New Science of Physical Health. Then I'll come back and I'll pick up on a theme from this 60-second DVD monologue. So let me transition now to the 60 seconds that I recorded, and we'll pick up on it in just a moment.
On November the 1st of 1989, I took a phone call from my mother. And these are the three words she said: love, Dad's died. It changed my world. He had a sudden heart attack and was massive. The doctors later told my mother he passed away before he hit the ground. He was just 47 years old. There is a song by a musician called Jimmy Ruffin. It's called What Becomes of the Brokenhearted. Let's listen to the chorus, and the words go: what becomes of the brokenhearted? Who's had love that's now departed? I know I've got to find some kind of peace of mind, maybe. The purpose of this DVD learning series is to develop some peace of mind from our number one killer. One person every 10 minutes of every day in this country dies of a cardiovascular event. Most like my father, premature. Peace of mind for my family and peace of mind for your family. If I can help you to discover the beat of your healthy heart and you avoid a cardiac event, this will give me peace of mind.
So this event happened back in 1989, a long time ago as I record this episode. And our family grew up in a small country town of just under 4,000 people. And my father, who passed away
back in 1989 was a house painter who owned his own business. My mother, she owned a local hairdressing salon in the town. There was myself, my twin brother, and my mother, and my father. Family holidays were in the 1970s and 1980s when we went to other regional parts of Australia, when we stayed in places like caravan parks and hot Australian summers. You go down to the river, you spend hours on some kind of flotation device, like a tire tube or something, just staying cool in this river all day. And we had a great, where I lived in this country town, the house is still there, not owned by our family anymore, but it was a great double story house. We had a speedboat for a while. We had some motorbikes to ride in the empty lot next door. And then Saturday afternoons, this is what we used to do. We spent them sitting down in the wintertime in particular, watching our favorite Australian rules football team. So it'd be my dad, my mum, my twin brother and I. And more often than not, there'd be a hot roast lunch being cooked and served just as the football is about to start at around 2 p.m. That's when Australian rules football starts traditionally on a Saturday afternoon. So you were lying on the couch you were sitting on the couch, you eat your lunch, or sit at the table, watch the football. And then afterwards you'd lie on the floor or the couch and you'd try and stay awake from a full belly to watch the Mighty Blues, the Carlton Football Club. If you're not from Australia or you're not from a particular part of Australia, that's the name of the football team that we supported in our family. Well, most of us did. And we watched them to try and notch another victory. All of these memories, all of those traditions that we had in our family of the holidays and the watching the football and going to all the things that we did, going to school and so on, mum and dad off to their work, it all ended that day that my father passed away, aged just 46 years old. I used to think it was 47, but I did a recalculation a few years ago and figured out he was about to turn 47. He was only 46. For the past 32 years, I've been a health and physical education teacher in schools across Australia. During the last decade of my career, I've spent time working with and consulting with over 100 PhDs in areas like cardiology, medicine, public health, exercise physiology, cognitive neuroscience, pediatrics, and a whole lot more. The whole premise of the new science of physical health and my book called Health Secrets is to take complex medical research that's stuck in journals and create simple lessons from it that we can all use. So after teaching for 32 years face-to-face, as well as developing, I really got into this and I love this, the use of online learning portals where I can prove that there is deep engagement and deep knowledge being created through those. I haven't found anyone who has done what I did, and that is go out and seek the doctors and the professors whose names are attached to the recent medical research and obtain interviews with them, and in some cases work directly with them.
At the beginning of every mini-series, I have a driving question that I want to propose to you. So here is it. Here it is here. Who is going to get us out of the mess that we are in with our physical health? That's the question. So how much of a mess are we in? Cardiovascular disease, it kills 18 million people a year worldwide. Another 18 million people a year, approximately, are diagnosed with cardiovascular disease. From all the medical research I've studied and the over 100 PhDs I've consulted over the past decade in areas like cardiology, in exercise physiology, in childhood physical activity research, cognitive neuroscience, exercise science, oncology, psychology, and the list goes on, we can estimate 80% of these deaths and diagnosis don't have to happen. That's the research. We cause it to ourselves, and the cost on the medical system worldwide is in the trillions. Puts a strain on the economy of every developed nation in the world. Massive strain. That's the leading cause of sickness and death. The second leading cause of sickness and death worldwide are cancer events. Kills about 8.2 million people a year across the planet. But about another 8.2 million people are diagnosed with a cancer event and survive temporarily. So they are the number one and number two causes of sickness and death. And number three is nowhere to be seen. What I mean by that is it's nowhere near
the number of deaths from cardiovascular disease and cancer, which are preventable. Globally, this is another part of the mess we're in with our health. Globally, an estimated 462 million individuals are affected by type 2 diabetes. It's about 6.28% of the entire planet's population. As a health and physical education teacher, where I've had over 30,000 lessons behind me in the past 32 years of my career, I could ask at least 1,000 people, 10,000 people, this question: what does type 2 diabetes do to your body? Out of those 1,000 or 10,000, 999 or 9,999 of them would not know that it drives the development of cardiovascular disease. There is an absolute linear correlation between the two. It's not taught to them in school systems across the world. If it is, it's at a surface level at best. I'd put up $10,000 cash as a reward to ask those 1,000 people to describe to me the science of physical health, about life inside their body, and how type 2 diabetes causes cardiovascular disease. Remember, the one rule is you can't look at the internet and you can't have a background or an expertise in my area or similar. You know what? If I was to ask the average person without my background or in expertise, I think my $10,000 would be safe and stay in my bank account. I'll ask you the question right now as the listener, without looking at anything on the internet. And if you don't have a background like mine or an expertise in health and physical education or something like that, medicine, then what is your answer to the question? How does type 2 diabetes drive cardiovascular disease to develop inside the body? Can you walk me through the physiological steps or the molecular changes that happen as a result of developing type 2 diabetes? Let me ask you this question, an education question, before we deep dive into this mini-series. If millions and millions of students left school at age 18 from the 12th grade in any country in the world, unable to read and write or to do arithmetic, would there be a global inquiry into the education system? Now, I'm going to assume that you agree with me and say yes. So how are students at age 18, or in some countries 16, and leaving school and they never get into a field of study of like mine or similar, how are they able to leave school and not understand and apply the basics of life inside their body? For those people involved in education systems across the world who would argue that we do have health literacy as a component of our curriculums, I would argue that if it worked, we wouldn't see preventable diseases like cardiovascular disease and some forms of cancer, type 2 diabetes, and other metabolic conditions exploding. Remember the word preventable. They're exploding and they're causing death and sickness unnecessarily, just like it did to my father all those years ago, just like it did for Thomas Edison all those years ago when he died in 1932. It is just like saying, well, I've taught you to read and write. How come 462 million of you can't do it? The new science of physical health teaches you about life inside your body. But again, back to the driving question of this mini-series. Who is going to get us out of the mess we're in with our physical health?
Okay, everybody, that's the transition bell, and that's it for today's episode. The answer to that question should be pretty obvious right now, because in the next episode of Decipher the Health Code, you are going to hear directly from one of the world leaders who is going to help us get out of the mess that we're in. And obviously, that's Dr. Andrew Rickman, who I've called the Thomas Edison of health technology in the 2020s. My name for him, my label, not his, but it is absolutely incredible the technology that he talks about that is going to be a part of your daily life either next year
or the year after, depending on when you're listening to this episode. But this episode's been published in 2021. And I can tell you the technology, this is public knowledge. Dr. Rickman's company, where he's the chairman, CEO, and founder of a health technology company based and headquartered in London in the United Kingdom. In fact, it's headquartered not too far away from where my wife was born in England. And his company, which also has offices throughout the United States as well and Europe and other parts of the United Kingdom, his company is working public knowledge with the Apple Corporation from San Jose in California. And Dr. Rickman's company is public knowledge, is valued at over $1 billion. And it literally, I don't want to spoil what he talks about. So I'm not going to go into that here at the end of this episode. But we're going to end today's episode because we're up to about 41 minutes right now. And that's long enough for today's episode. But tomorrow, you will hear from Dr. Rickman. Don't want you to miss out on that because it's a real treat and a rare privilege for me to get access to someone who is actually helping in, not just figuratively, but in reality, helping to decipher the health code. And I want to talk more about what he has got, not got to offer, but what he is building into our lives, which will be and is significant. All right, everybody, thank you so much for letting me share with you. Can't wait to be back tomorrow with Dr. Rickman and the rest of this part of the first episode of that mini-series inserted here with our second collaborator, Dr. Andrew Rickman. Bye for now.